get this thing into our third hour. What's going on? Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California from the Quicken Loan Studios. Quicken Loans apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Rest of the day looks like this. One more hour of this program. Adam Hawk is going to join me momentarily, so I'm going to recap on what happened when he went to Pomona to check out Cruz Pedregon. Mark Stein is an NBA reporter for the New York Times. He'll join us at 40 past. Coming up later on today, the RPO. Trevor Price and I do our weekly NFL podcast, Rome Price Opinion. Trevor's back on track, got his last pick correct, and he's looking to start a new streak. And we're coming off big weekend. He's got lots and lots of takes over what happened over the past weekend, things that we have not gotten to yet on this program. So look for that a little bit later on today. Meantime, good reaction to Joe Kelly. And understandably so. That was a really good interview. At Boss WS Champs 2018 tweets, Boston legend Joe Fight Club Kelly on. Hell yeah, that just made my Monday. Me too. He was so good. Fight Club Kelly. Denlesks tweets, hopefully the Doloros are hitting my favorite spots in Italy. The Vatican, the Venison Canals, and the Leaning Tower of Pizza. Sincerely, Adelephant. Hello. Rome. We were in Pomona with Hawk. Signed meth, payphones, lost dreams, and bad real estate. Joe in Huntington Beach, wore Pomona, still being better than La Habra. John in Huntington Beach, bro. Dude, stop acting like it's Newport Beach or even Corona Del Mar. I mean, I like HB. I like HB, bro. You are really arrogant about HB. I mean, I can make the argument that HB is not even Seal Beach. I mean, bro, you're not even Long Beach, really. South Bay's going to jump in there. Redondo, Hermosa, Manhattan. I mean, Santa Monica's got something to say about it. Venice does. Don't get me started on Santa Barbara. Hell, Oxnard will jump in there. Port Hueneme. I want to hear from any of the beaches. How about OB, PB, any of the beaches? What about this hat, John in Huntington Beach, going on and on about HB this, HB that? React to me. Is HB even in the same class as OB? Hey, John, ever been to Oceanside? This guy's just killing everybody all the time from his vantage point at HB. I like HB. When I was a little kid, when I was an infant, our family lived in HB. I like HB. But, bro, I mean, you never stop. Speaking of Pomona, so this past weekend, very mobile for the entire jungle. We all kind of scattered. We all went our separate ways. Myself, I jumped that steel bird to New York for my appearance on the NFL on CBS. I get on a steel bird. I fly to New York. Hawk hops a Hyundai Santa Fe, and he drives to Pomona, California. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see how it looked. The reason Hawk went to Pomona was to see Cruz Pedregon at the Auto Club NHRA Finals, and he brought Robert, a.k.a. Ross, from Friends, a.k.a. the new guy, to the races with him. Now, let me say this. I would have been at the races had I not had my obligation in New York, or at least I thought that I would have been at the races until I saw Hawk live tweeting his embarrassing appearance there. If you've been to his Twitter feed or mine, you will see the greatest example ever of how not to dress for a day at the drag races, especially as an invited guest. Backwards, snapback, $10 shades, maroon skinny jeans, a floral pattern shirt, button to the top, and a porn stash that just screams, unironic creep, punch me in the face. Hawk, it's an NHRA event, not a Skrillex concert. I mean, bro, are you just trolling now? Are you looking to get your ass kicked? Meantime, He shows up, and Cruz and his general manager, Caleb Cox, did not seem to mind how he looked because they gave my guys amazing VIP access and an experience both these guys have been raving about since they got back. Now, since I could not be there and I haven't had time to debrief with Hawk, I'm just going to do it live. Hawk, bring it on in. I want to hear all about this experience because I was not there. I can only follow it online. In fact, this is so important. I want you in the studio here. I'm not going to talk through the glass at you. Joined right now by my EP, executive producer, Adam Hawk. He's in studio. All right, bro. So tell me about it. What was it like? How did the weekend go?
Oh, man, it was incredible. It was so cool. We rolled out there Saturday morning, 11 a.m. in the brand new Hyundai Santa Fe. Definitely one of the cars that I like having people in, unlike the 2001 Camry. So that was pretty sick. Ross, the new guy, came with me, picked him up in the San Gabriel Valley, and we rolled out to Pomona with my best friend Shane, and the three of us got, like, the greatest VIP package ever. We had media parking. We got to park as close as we wanted, and then we went straight to the pit in the trailer and hung out with Cruz and Caleb, and they showed us everything. And it was great. But I knew the second that I walked in there that I did not dress for the occasion at all.
No, I'm looking at the pictures, dude. You look horrible. I mean, you look even worse than normal. I mean, did you guys have any idea? Turn your mic on.
It is on. The mic is on.
Did you just, I mean, did he just go through the entire answer without a mic on? Did anybody hear what he just said?
Is that what happened? There's no mic?
TV says they didn't get it, but radio did.
Oh, interesting. Should I move back?
Let me ask you. Yeah, right. Let me ask you this. Is everybody who needs to be hearing him right now, or does he need to go back on his side of the glass? Because we can do that, too. You go back, Dowie.
See
go
you,
back
Jim.
There.
See ya.
That was nice while that lasted. That didn't work so well. Awkward! Anyway, so I think some of you heard the answer and some of you did not. For those of you who did not hear the answer, you didn't miss anything at all. It was just Hawk trying to settle in and being awkward, about as awkward as he looked there. All right, so now you're back where you belong on your side of the glass, Adam. It's not your fault. Did you guys have any idea exactly what it is that you were looking at? Did you have any idea what the NHRA was other than what you had heard from Cruz when he came in studio?
I honestly didn't know what NHRA stood for, and that's not a joke.
Why am I not surprised by that? I know that's not a joke, bro.
Robert Ross was super into it. He grew up with his dad going to this stuff. So he was like our unofficial tour guide. He was telling us everything. He was chopping it up with the pit crew. He knew what he was talking about. He could hold his own. I couldn't, but Caleb Cox, the GM of the team and Cruz's right-hand man, was super cool to me about it. He treated me and Shane and Robert with the utmost respect. They showed us how to break down a car and how to put it together. They showed us everything that they fabbed up. They showed us the trailer. And they treated us to the hospitality tent with free lunch and drinks, and it was awesome just kicking it with those guys, for sure.
Dude, you were so much better on that side of the glass than you are here, man. You're much more relaxed. Your content's better. I probably should have never brought you in. You know what's amazing is when you talk about the time they spent with you guys, normally on any other day when an athlete's getting ready for a big event, you can't get near these guys. They don't want to have anything to do with anybody except for their focus and their process. It sounds like these guys had a lot of time for you guys. What's the day like for the crew as they get closer and closer to running?
It's a great question. They had two runs, one at 12:30, one at 3:30. So it's all about putting the car together and tuning it up, putting the supercharger on, like hitting the throttle, seeing what that's like. And it's so awesome just to stand there and watch them do this because there's like eight guys working on a car and I don't know what's going on. It looks like, you know, Tim Allen in his garage on tool time working on his hot rod, but it was pretty sweet to watch. And then they went out at 12:30 for the run, and Cruz walked with me and Robert and my buddy Shane, like, you know, like an athlete walking out of the tunnel. He like let us go with him, and it was cool. And then he got up to the starting line, and the head of NHRPR, her name is Melissa, she put us right behind the cars, and it was the scariest moment of my entire life because these things go 0 to 300.
Seriously, I mean, scariest moment?
It was unbelievable. They go 0 to 300 in four
Scarier
seconds.
Scarier than when you came out that morning and you lost your car after your wife told you to move it? Even scarier than that?
Second. That was... You're right. Great correction, because I was very scared of my wife's wrath. But yeah, when those cars go off, two of them at a time, it just hits you in the chest like an earthquake. And there's nitro fumes in your nose and in your eyes. And it's unbelievable. These guys do it for a living, so it's nothing to them. But they were like filming us watching it because they knew that we were going to clown ourselves and like jump 10 feet in the air like a scared cat. And it definitely happened, man. It was really, really scary, but really, really fun.
All right. So how did Cruz do?
Cruz did great the first run. He clocked in around 4 seconds. He qualified for Sunday's big race. These were qualifiers that we were at. And then here's the really awkward part. And I'm sorry to sell out the Snap-on crew like this. Shout out to Snap-on. They did not have a great run the second time. Something happened with the wheelie bar, and they barely got off the starting line. And they had told us we're really going to go for it because we just qualified. So we're really just going to go B to the dub, balls to the wall, if you will. And sorry.
Well, you are settling in, aren't you, Hawk?
They went after it, and unfortunately it didn't go the way they wanted. And this was a couple hours after they had
tuned. Did they blame you?
Probably. Bad luck, yeah. And, you know, they looked so visibly upset afterwards that there was a really awkward point where we were like, should we just leave and not say goodbye?
Yes.
And we probably should have, but we hung out awkwardly as they took the car apart, and then Caleb came over and said goodbye to us. But I felt really bad because it was like, you know, I'm sure you've experienced this before, where if something doesn't go right at the racetrack, the last thing you want is like the people that you brought around.
Oh, dude, I mean, as an example, the Breeders' Cup Classic, when Cher Belief was the favorite and came out of the gate, and Byron slammed right into us, and NBC carries the event, they had a camera right in my face. And no, I don't want any Larry Brown references, but the camera was maybe 2 inches from my face waiting for the reaction. And then, to your point, the rest of the night, I had my entire crew with us, and something really bad had happened, and we didn't want to have a bad night for everybody else. You know, so you got to kind of man up, and you got to own it, and you got to handle that thing in a certain way. So, yeah, to answer your question, I've probably had something like that happen, yes.
Yeah, and it's weird because you're around, like, the owner, and you're around someone who's got a really vested interest in it, and you so badly want them to do well. And it didn't go that well, and you just wish you could be anywhere but there, but you still got to do the right thing and say goodbye and thank you. But I think they had a great night because they still qualified. They ran on Sunday, and Caleb told me that, you know, it's the end of the season yesterday, so they go really, really hard at the track after everyone leaves and all the crews are broken down, and they all meet up together, and they cook, and they drink, and they go nuts from, like, 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. And I hope I didn't just rat out a secret of the tour or something like that, but they go hard for sure.
Well, we'll know. The next time we call them, if they don't return the call or we can't get them on the show, we'll know that you were saying things you shouldn't have been saying. Like, the entire event, like, how many people were there? What was the culture of the place like? And how did they treat you? I mean, were people looking at you like, hey, man, you should not be up flossing in here with that porn stash the way you are. You're going to get the hands.
Yeah, me and Ross walking around with just stupid shirts. You know, we looked out of place for sure, but they treated us great. They treated us first class.
Hawk.
Yeah, but they treated us first class. The culture is really interesting.
I mean, didn't they look at Ross like, hey, man, the celebrities are all out. That guy from Friends is here.
Schwimmer's here, back from his armed robbery in the UK. Yeah, they were great to us, and we did get some looks, but, you know, everyone's there just to drink beer, chew tobacco, and watch some races, and smoke some cigarettes, and chew more tobacco. And, you know, we fit in, not well, but we held our own, you know. I brought a can of Skull to fit in.
Keep telling yourself
that.
It was a nice
prop. We
held our own. So would you do it again?
100%. One of the coolest parts was in between the races, talking about the Jungle with Cruz. He's been listening since the 90s, so is Caleb. Cruz scores the smack-off. He scored this smack-off. He had Rick and Buffalo up really, really high. So that's really cool that Cruz is that into it. They, on their lunch breaks, they watch the TV show. One of the coolest things, Jim, is they've got 4 of your logos on their car.
Amazing.
And it's valuable real estate, and it's the absolute biggest logo besides the Snap-on logo that they have. And you just can't miss it. Like, it might look small in the pictures on Twitter, but if you go there, it is the biggest Jim Rome sticker I've ever seen in my life. And it's really cool. They got it on both
sides.
Sounds
great. I hope the bill does not come. I don't want to go to the mailbox and find out I've been paying for this whole time.
Right.
That can't be cheap. All right, so is there anybody you need to thank? It sounds like they really hooked you up. They went to the mat for you and for Ross. Is there anybody you have not mentioned that you should thank?
I do want to thank Caleb Cox, Cruz Pedregon, the entire Snap-on crew, the Raceway at Pomona, the NHRA, Melissa from the NHRA, who is great. I believe her last name is Coleman. And I'll speak for myself here, not on your behalf at all, but I do not.
Never speak on my behalf, ever.
I do not want to thank Tito Ortiz, who did not say hello to us when he dropped by the pit.
Hawk, way to ruin a perfectly mediocre segment by going with something like that. So wait, Tito Ortiz didn't know who you were. Tito Ortiz did not respect you. Tito Ortiz big leagued you, Hawk. Maybe he looked at you and thought, I'm not talking to that bag with the porn stash. Dude, you did not just name drop him in a negative manner, did you?
Tito blew right past me and went straight for Cruz.
Dude, why wouldn't he?
I mean, I don't know, but say what's up, man. Like, have a little respect.
Why don't you step to him?
I was going to, but I just...
Why don't you step to Tito Ortiz and say, hey, yo, man, Yeah, that's what I thought, Tito Ortiz. And then keep walking.
I was thinking about it. I was telling Robert, hey, man, hold me back. But no.
You're upset that Tito Ortiz blew right through you to get to Cruz Pedregon. Did you just say that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yes, and that's my big takeaway.
Good, because your segment kind of, I don't want to say it sucked, but there was nothing for anybody to react to until you said that, and now you just gave them something. That Tito Ortiz disrespected you so we could get to the guy actually running.
Yeah, and when Chuck Liddell is done with Tito, I'm next.
Hawk's be like, man, you know, Conor McGregor went right through me and didn't even acknowledge my presence.
Shout out to the Michelada lady, too. She makes a mean Michelada, which for those that don't know, is beer and Clamata. It's great. And she treated us well the whole time. Three of those, and we had a great time. Thank you, Cruz. Thank you, Caleb. That was awesome.
All right. Thank you, Hawk. Beat it. That's not a bad recap until the very end about how Tito Ortiz disrespected Hawk. Went right through him. Hey, you, with the stupid shirt and the even stupider mustache, get out of my way so I can talk to the guy who's going to run 300 miles per hour. All right, so Hawk, wow, I don't even know where to start there. Your reaction to it, he went to Pomona, I would have gone. And absolutely, I would have gone. And that actually sounded like a great, great time. Of course, I was in New York last weekend. I'll be in New York next weekend, but Hawk and Ross went. In terms of his first answer in studio, where I think that maybe the radio folks heard it, but the TV folks did not, but I wasn't sure. This guy answers it at Hitman Canadian. Quote, we unfortunately heard it. At Wells in the 360, we heard his answer on the TV side too. So who didn't hear it? Whatever. Chris and KC, in addition to the audio issues with Hawk, he also has spots on his shirt. All right, then. What I still want to get to, Jimmy Butler on the move. Is it a good move for Philadelphia or not? Is it part of the process or not? How about the Bills and Jets? Buffalo, worst offense I think I've seen in quite some time, yet they still find a way to drop 41 on the Jets in their own house. Todd Bowles still has a job. I'm not looking to get anybody fired, but how does that guy still have a job? I'll tell you somebody who doesn't, Bobby Petrino. And I'm not looking to get anybody fired, but I might have tried to get him fired. But I didn't have to. When your defense goes out there and gives up like 75 every Saturday, you're going to get fired. And he did. I will try to get to that as well. The Doink Show. Did you check that out? I got to find a way to get all of this in and a conversation with Mark Stein. You know, there's something to be said for being the best. You know, when you've outrun, outpaced, outsmarted the competition, elite athletes know that you cannot be the best until you have beaten the best. If you want to compete at the highest level, you need to be strong, and you've got to stay strong, just like Castrol Edge. It is the strongest full synthetic motor oil, engineered with fluid titanium technology to reduce power-robbing friction and to maximize engine performance. Did you know, for instance, friction can rob 10% of performance from your engine? Imagine being lined up across the ball from somebody who is operating fully at 100%. You're at maybe 90. You're going to lose every single time. Castrol Edge, strong under pressure, reducing friction so your engine can't perform at its highest level. It's not only strong, it is 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. That according to the Kurt Orban test. Kurt Orban, good job, flight deck. The strength you need when you need it most. Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure, Castrol Edge.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Hit the NFL hard. I'm going to talk some NBA next segment with Mark Stein. ATP on a Monday. Ask the Pros. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Amazing customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. ATP question from Bella. What's up, Bella? Bella writes, hi, Jim. Sadly, Stan Lee passed away today. What was or who is your favorite superhero? Thanks, B. I actually met him once. I was on one of the late night shows, and Stan Lee was on. and very nice gentleman. When I met him, when we what little time we had backstage or on the show, and there was a lot of buzz around him. So I met him once. In terms of my favorite superhero, are we going to stay in the Marvel Universe? I got to go Iron Man. Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man's badass. If we go outside the DC, to DC, Batman, of course. Batman. So are we staying inside or outside? If we go outside, Batman. With his pepperoni nips. Thanks, B. Thanks for playing along, and thank you for sending the question to the right place. I'm not going to answer ATPs on Twitter. I can't answer ATPs anywhere but the address designated for it. All right, really quickly, some reaction to Hawk. At Willie Beeman 1 tweets, Hawk is the most awkward and embarrassing person out there. He's on the short list. I don't know if he's the most awkward and embarrassing person. Hey, once he got behind the glass, he was fine. But then again, I was not there. I was not in Pomona when that went down. All right, so Caleb Cox is in. Caleb Cox would know. He's the GM. He's with Cruz. Caleb is right there. He's Cruz's right-hand guy. Wore Adam Hawk burning nitro instead of Kron. And wore Jim Rome coming to Pomona in February and sitting in and warming up our Nitro funny car. Caleb, man, you know I will if I can. You know I will if I can. And that's an honor. I understand that. I know that you do not let anybody do that. I know Hawk's got no shot of doing that. And I've had the honor of doing a few amazing things. I think the most amazing thing, by virtue of my platform and the microphone, I think the most amazing thing, and I've got to think about this, but probably it was going up in a Black Hawk helicopter. That was incredible. I've told you that story before. We went to a military base in Portland, and we had a tour stop there. And I got clearance to go up in the Black Hawk. And that was back before we had kids, and Janet was traveling with me on all the events. And I said, can my wife come up? They said, no. Hey, radio man, you're lucky you get to go up. So when I started working my way over there and they wanted to give me a little crash course on what to do and what not to do, the guy on the base that was walking me over there, I said, yo, sir, what's that thing like? He looked at me and he said, sir, I have no idea. I said, you have no idea. Sir, I have never gotten within 1,000 feet of the Black Hawk. I said, sir, how long have you been here? 10 years, sir. And I said, you've never gotten within 1,000 feet of the Black Hawk, but they're letting me up in the Black Hawk? Yes, sir. Sir. I'm like, holy crap. That's amazing. So I went up in the Black Hawk, and the Black Hawk lifts straight up, and we're flying around. And I remember the guy in charge saying to me, hey, Rome, flaps up or flaps down? I said, I'm sorry. I've never been more inadequate in my life. Like Hawk most of every day of his life. I didn't even know what that meant, flaps up or flaps down. And the guy looked at me and finally goes, Rome, doors open or not? I said, flaps up, sir. They opened those things up, man, that was scary. Then you're in only by harness in a Black Hawk. And we flew that thing down and did the tour stop. That was an amazing deal. So, Caleb, I feel you. If you let me sit in the car and it warms up, that'd be awesome. The only other thing I did was I was in the pace car with Jimmy Johnson at the Brickyard. And he got that thing right up against the wall. He was messing with me, and it worked. It worked. That was scary. That's when I allegedly broke the pace car, which I didn't do. I did not do. Jimmy Butler knows it. I know it. The only person who didn't know it was that idiot Flack. This woman literally blamed me for breaking the pace car. He pulls in. He pulls over. This thing empties out all sorts of whatever was inside the car. I don't even know. And it's running down the track. And she's like, you broke the pace car. And then she even said it ironically, or to be funny, she literally said that I broke the pace car. Jimmy had my back.
Can't go to the Brickyard and not drive on the track if you're out there. So I let you drive it. You do a very good job. You're sane and smart. We bring it in. And what ended up taking place is that the electric sensor for the radiator fan went out and the car was just sitting there running with the air conditioner on and stuff, and it overheated. And when it overheated, it blew off the radiator hose, and steam was going everywhere, and it looked really bad, but you did not do that.
There it is. I always forget what exactly happened. That's what happened. Like, I could do that. Yeah, that's my fault. Huh, lady? Like, that was my fault. NASCAR's so awesome. They are so awesome to work with, except her. Let's see. The Boomer 18 tweets. Rome, did I hear correctly? Did the guy who doesn't know who Larry Holmes is feel shaded for not being recognized by an athlete? That's good. That's Boomer Parkin. That's really strong. At SoCal Jeff tweets, honestly, I would pay the $99.99 for the Hawk v. Ortiz fight. At Wells in 360 tweets, did Hawk really just say he bought a can of Skol to fit in? Yeah, Adam, that can of chew really cancels out that ridiculous outfit. Hawk, our best content is always after your worst content. Have you noticed? Our very best content, aside from most of the things that I do, is after you come on this show. These guys are killing it. It's all great. When we return, we talk to Mark Stein. We're going to talk some NBA with him. NBA in the early season has been amazing. I don't remember an NBA season being this interesting and this compelling this early. Mark Stein joins us to break that down. That's coming up next. Welcome back. One NFL note that we did not cover today. Cooper Kupp is out for the season with a torn ACL. That is a bad, bad break for the Rams. We will get into that on the RPO podcast a little bit later on today. Rome Price opinion. Right now, though, let's talk some NBA. As promised, we are joined by a Cal State Fullerton legend. He covers the NBA for the New York Times. He has had a very busy week. We are joined once again by Mark Stein. Mark, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Really nice to talk to you. It's been quite a weekend in the NBA, so let me just jump right into this. What was your reaction, Mark, when you heard that the Timberwolves and Sixers had agreed to a deal for Jimmy Butler?
It's quite an everyday in the NBA. That's the beauty of it. But no, you know what? Look, this had to end. It had, you know, it couldn't go on anymore. It had gotten just ridiculous around the Timberwolves. I saw them about 5-6 days before the trade in LA when they played the Clippers, and it just, you know, the cloud that was hovering over this team was only growing. Everybody wasn't happy, and I think, you know, Tom Thibodeau hoped that they could play through it and they would win and be competitive with Butler, and that would mask kind of the, you know, the elephant in the room, but obviously it was going in completely the opposite direction. So I love it for Philly. There are no guarantees for the Sixers that this is going to work, but, you know, I'm a fan of big swings and being bold, and I think this is a very bold move for the Sixers. For the Wolves, you know, we have to give it time and see, maybe they will be proven right, but to me, this is a pretty disappointing end to a very sad saga. I just don't think they got enough. I think they could have gotten a much better deal from Miami had they taken what the Heat had put on the table about a month earlier. And again, maybe they're going to prove me wrong. Maybe Covington and Sarge fit in fantastically next to Wiggins and Towns, but no first-round pick, no two-way player like Josh Richardson. I think it's a very, very deflating the way for this thing to end from the Minnesota perspective.
Mark Stein joining us. Mark, I mean, they certainly could have done better. They should have done better. I see it the exact same way you do. What about Philadelphia in the process? For instance, Philadelphia is off to an 8-6 start, which is a little bit underwhelming considering the step that they took last season. For instance, if they were off to a better start, do they make this deal?
Probably not. I think they're a little jittery, not just because they had a so-so start, but, you know, the top of the East has gotten stronger. The East has been everybody's punching bag for two decades, and it's still, the West is far deeper. But at the top of the East, you know, look past Boston's early struggles. You know, they still have a loaded team with tons of assets. They're only going to get better. Toronto, so far, the Kawhi gamble couldn't have gone any better, and Milwaukee is finally playing to its potential. So I think the Sixers looked around and saw all that and said, okay, Paul George didn't even look at us in free agency. We weren't able to trade for Kawhi Leonard, and if he doesn't stay in Toronto, he's probably going to the Clippers. We're not going to have a shot at him. Let's trade for Butler. Let's not go into free agency again with no guarantees. Let's make a trade, get Butler in, have him for the rest of the season, have the chance to re-sign him to a max deal, see if we can make this trio work. I think it makes a lot of sense for the Sixers on all those fronts. Now, obviously, they're going to need shooting. They're going to need depth. The rest of their roster, there are a lot of questions. And the fit, will Simmons, Embiid, and Butler mesh? You know, especially Embiid and Butler, those are two very big personalities. But given the options Philly had, I love that they did something now instead of waiting.
We're talking to Mark Stein. Mark, one more thought about what happened in Minneapolis or Minnesota. I mean, Butler made it very clear that he did not want to re-sign in Minnesota. How much of that was about the money? And then how much of that was about his relationship with Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins?
I don't want to sit here and say the money wasn't an element, because obviously money is always a factor. But I think if Jimmy would have said, I want to stay here, he would have gotten a max deal in the summer. You know, they offered him an extension as soon as they were allowed to in July, but that number was based on Jimmy's current salary. And by going to free agency, he has a chance to make a lot more. The most they could offer him in an extension was about $100 million. He can make $190 million as a max free agent next summer. So if everything was going well there, I don't see why Butler wouldn't have gotten his money. But I think clearly he didn't want to play with Towns and Wiggins anymore. I think he wanted a bigger stage. I think he wanted to be around players that he thought could get him into the title contention mix with more assurances than Minnesota could offer. But, you know, it's a stunning turnaround for, you know, he came at, you know, Tom Thibodeau gambled everything to get him, gave up a big package to get him. They make the playoffs. They end this huge playoff drought with him. And for it to be over this quickly is stunning.
Mark Stein joining us. It is stunning. And then you've got the story of Carmelo Anthony. In fact, you have the story of Carmelo Anthony. You tweeted that on Friday afternoon, Houston announced details of a Carmelo Anthony Foundation event scheduled for Wednesday. On Saturday night, there are questions circulating league-wide about whether Thursday's loss at Oklahoma City was Anthony's last game as a Rocket, quote, end of quote. So he didn't play Mark on Saturday or Sunday. Where do things stand with the Rockets and Melo?
Well, look, the Rockets strenuously insist that he's still a member of the team, but I have at least two sources close to this situation who've insisted to me that Anthony's already been told that his time with the team will be ending in the near future. After the game, you saw ESPN, after their game last night, ESPN's Tim McMahon reported that, you know, based on the people he's talking to within the organization, people are operating under the assumption that Carmelo Anthony has played his last game in Oklahoma City, I mean, for the Houston Rockets. I would say around the league and around the Rockets, that is the expectation. Nobody expects this to continue, but Daryl Morey did come out and hold a little media availability yesterday and insist that the Rockets are not ready to move away from him. So I think we'll just have to see how this plays out. But everybody around this situation is saying it's over and that the Rockets are going to go in a different direction. So that, I think, is still the expectation. Let's see how it plays out. The Rockets left for Denver. They play the Nuggets tomorrow night. And Carmelo Anthony is not on the trip. So he played Thursday, he practiced Friday, and now he's not with the team.
All right, so if that's how that plays out, Mark,
we're going to have to wait and see.
If that's how that plays out, excuse me, what were the Rockets expecting with the addition of Melo, and why has it not worked out?
Well, the one thing I do agree with what Daryl Morey was saying yesterday, I do think Carmelo has been unfairly scapegoated for Houston's problems. I mean, he is by no means the sole reason that they got off to a 4-7 start. I mean, their offense, which was one of the most potent in league history last season, I mean, was down at the bottom of the league until their last couple games. And, you know, that they've had the suspensions, they've had injuries, a lot of guys there are just not playing up to their level. You know, Chris Paul's been playing with a bad elbow when he wasn't suspended. Harden hasn't been anywhere near his MVP form until last night's home win over Indiana. So there are a lot of things going wrong there, and it isn't right to just put this on Carmelo. But I think what's really happening here is Gary Clark is on a two-way contract and has really emerged as a guy that Mike D'Antoni loves and fits the Houston style probably better than Carmelo does. And, you know, he's going to get more minutes now. That would mean a diminished role for Carmelo Anthony. How is that going to sit with Carmelo? It was, you know, they already had to sell him on, look, if you come here, we need you to be the sixth man. Carmelo agreed to that. He didn't want to do that in Oklahoma City. He's been willing to be the sixth man there. But if he does stay, it sounds like his minutes are going to be way, way down. So there's really just no role for him right now, and I think that's kind of what's leading to all this.
Well, so, and then finally, is there a role for him someplace else, or could this be the end of the road for him?
that's the obvious question, and looking at it right now, it's hard to see where he would land, who would go after him. I have yet to hear of confirmed interest out there from another team. I know Philadelphia has been suggested because the Sixers do have holes in their roster after the trade and do need shooting, but it's going to be very interesting. If this thing is falling apart with Houston, he might not have another option, which is hard to believe since he's only 34, but you know, this it's been trending in this direction for some time now. I mean, he's an ISO. He's thrived his whole career in ISO heavy offenses, and teams in the NBA don't play that way anymore. So this might be it.
Mark Stein, my guest. Mark, one last thought before you go. Beating the Hawks, granted they are the Hawks, but the Lakers beat the Hawks. They're now one game over 500. I've got to get your thoughts. How would you describe what you've seen from the Lakers so far this year?
Well, the biggest thing is Tyson Chandler has, you know, I had a front row seat for Tyson Chandler being basically the goalie, the defensive anchor on the Mavericks championship team in 2011. So I've seen Tyson Chandler at his best, and I'm a big fan of Tyson Chandler, but I certainly didn't think he would be able to have this immediate impact that he has had. And I mean, that already looks like a fantastic pickup that has really helped the Lakers on the defensive end, where they, you know, their two big areas of concern, obviously shooting like Philly, but also defense. And, you know, I think people look at Chandler's age and say 36, how much did he really have left? But, I talked to one coach in the league last week who told me Chandler's going to keep doing this because, you know, these last 4 years in Phoenix have not been taxing on his body. I mean, there were long stretches where they rested him and, last season the Suns were openly tanking and Chandler didn't even play. So the Lakers, that would seem like a small move, is a big deal. And you know, in the West, you can't get any further in the hole. Like, they got off to the rough start. I mean, the West is so deep. If the Lakers want to make the playoffs, they needed to do something early, and I think they found a nice little answer.
In the West, it does get late very early indeed. Mark Stein covers the NBA for the New York Times. Also, the pride and joy of Cal State Fullerton. Mark, great job. Always good to have you on the program. Thanks for closing the show for us.
Sounds good, man.
Great talking to you. Mark Stein. And that is going to close the show. Huge Call today is brought to you by Zipa. If you snore, it's offensive. Straight up offensive. Because there is a solution. Zipa. You need to stop right now. Get a Zipa. Make everybody happy. Zipa is 100% guaranteed. ZYPPAH.com. ZYPPAH.com. Zipa. Good day today. We had Jason Lockenfora back in hour number one. Bring it in. Joe Kelly, Red Sox stud in the second hour. Mark Stein talking a little NBA. And this just in, DLH 1029 tweets. Rome, tonight's Monday night game between the Niners and the Giants is going to be great. Signed, 1990. Who you got tonight? Giants in the points? RPO, Rome Price Opinion, episode 10, coming up later on. I'm going to tape that shortly. My thanks to Mark Stein, Joe Kelly, Jason Lockenfora. The XR4TI, RPO dropping later on today. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.